You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. My name's Phil Whelans, and it's a three-game Stop Hammer Time this week. Two wins and a draw. That's all right, except possibly the draw was the wrong one. But here to discuss those three games of football are, as always, Jim Grant.
Good evening.
Hello, Jim.
Hiya.
Everything all right? Go to the 4-0 Larnaca game.
No. I had a procedure the next day in hospital, and I had to be prepared for it. So,
I see. Fasting? Did you have to fast?
I was fasting. Yeah,
fasting. Ooh,
yeah,
that's no fun.
No.
Also joining us this week, it is a journalist, radio producer, broadcast creator of podcast. It's Mark Sandell.
Good evening, Mark. Phil. Good evening, Jim. Lovely to be here again.
Hiya.
Thank you.
Marvelous. Now. We had our doubleheader against Larnaca, which we won at a canter with an aggregate of 6-0. They had a player sent off. But in the middle of those two games, we played against Aston Villa. And after our appalling performance against Brighton, a real nadir of the season, we sort of rallied a bit. But did we rally enough? That's the question. We literally didn't rally enough. We got 1 point, which is not enough points from what I remember of how football works and tables. But the performance was better. What do we make of it? Mark, what did you think?
Well, I thought that we started it very much with the sort of the Brighton result very much at the forefront of the minds. When we kicked off against Forest in the previous must-win game, I thought there was our attitude right from the word go was really good. I wasn't sure it was against Villa.
No.
And I think that when they score with their very first attack, I think had we not got back into it as quickly as we did, I think it really could have been a very long afternoon that.
Yes.
Because we just didn't seem at it at all. And, you know, I think at that point when they scored, if someone said, look, don't worry, we'll get a point, I think most of us would have probably taken that at that point.
Yeah. Jim, what did you think?
Well, I would have taken the point at the start of the day, to be honest. I think their away form has been very good, and you can sort of see why they were, you know, happy to sort of sit and control us, and then, you know, look to attack on the break, and they've got pace and they've got threats. You know, I agree. I think first off we were certainly, you know, first 20 minutes sluggish and not at it, but we grew into the game, I thought, and overall, you know, deserved to be level, I thought, at the break, and shaded the second half, I felt. It was slightly unlucky not to get all three.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a fairly regular occurrence that it takes being scored against to sort of wake us up and remind us that we're in a football match. And that's very worrying. We're doing a lot of conceding first, aren't we, this season?
Yeah.
A lot of that. And it's very odd. I mean, it's just, you know, is that a sort of motivational thing? You know, can you? Surely that does feel like some form of motivation is within the manager's wheelhouse, or at least the backroom staff's sort of wheelhouse, or a set of simple instructions to give to the players with which they begin the game once the coin toss has happened. It, you know, we don't seem to know we're actually in a football match until the other team scores a goal. But actually, I agree. Once we got going in that half, we were actually very good. I thought Paqueta was very good. The signs we'd seen earlier in the season were sort of back again. The midfield, you know, was good again. Paqueta was good. Rice, Suchet were good. Bowen was very good, I thought.
Well, he had, what's his name? I've forgotten the left back, not the one before.
Yeah.
Guy who got the assist for the goal. His name's escaped.
He was substituted for Dina, wasn't he?
Bowen had him on toast, didn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely. He had him for pace. A lot of the good stuff that we produced came down that side. Benrahma, if you look at, you've said this time and again, if you look at the highlights reel of the game, Benrahma looks as though he must have been man of the match. But in reality, he was frustrating again, I thought.
Yeah,
wrong choices occasionally. There's a lot of that generally, isn't there, in the team, that the wrong option is...
Yeah.
Played it when we get the ball anywhere near the danger area.
Yes,
there was a great bit of play in the second half from Bowen where he nodded the ball past. I think it probably was Dina who was on by then.
Yeah,
just burned him on the outside, got into a good position, and just really dragged it back badly. Just a really bad pullback, sort of behind Fornals, who tried to get his foot round it. You know, but then Fornals could have taken a touch. Because Emerson had torn into the penalty area, was completely free. You know, it was just, it's all those kinds of things that is happening repeatedly, isn't it?
It is a problem with our attacking play, isn't it? We do have a bunch of players that are sort of like in Benrahma's case, literally two thirds of him is a really good footballer, and a third of him. I can play as well as he does. Whereas the others, they're more consistent across the board in that they are not out of the absolute top draw, but they are quite good. But if one of them had a foot like a wand, you know, but I don't think one of them does, you know. We'll sort of come on to that because I thought, you know, we'll come on to it later, but you know, I'll plant the idea now. Lanzini on Thursday, you thought, you know, obviously it's second flight opposition, but he was fantastic. The other thing about the Villa game was that I sort of felt that, the issue of substitutions and the sort of murmurings from fans around us in the ground, you know, it's now a sort of accepted sort of popular truth that Moyes is very bad with substitutions. I don't always agree with people who, you know, have that sentiment, but I do... You know, the facts show that he is sometimes slow to make substitutions and he doesn't seem to like to make all that many substitutions. He often likes to leave the 11 players out there to either keep doing what they're doing or get themselves out of the mess they've got themselves in. But that game felt that was an issue.
The disgruntlement, I absolutely agree with you. You hear that murmurings. We finished that game with no strikers on the field, which is bizarre. He got Scamacca to warm up twice, but didn't bring him on.
Yeah,
he took Ings off, who had not managed a single shot on or off target in the whole game. And that is a bit baffling. I understand that Cornet might have offered, get behind that kind, get you know, and he needed to sort of come on. But it is odd in a game where you would probably identify when you've only got 11 games to go and we've got to win three, four of them well. Aston Villa would be one of them. It's 1-1. You both identified, I thought we were probably the better team in the second half.
Yeah.
If we had an opportunity to push on, Villa did not look like they were going for the win. They were quite happy with the point.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that fanning about at the back there that they were doing and everything. And yet we ended with no strikers on the field, and that is baffling. And when you look, going back to the Benrahma thing, we had six shots on target, five of them were Benrahma.
Exactly.
Ings didn't have one. Bowen only had one, and Paqueta had one, and that's it.
Yes.
So however we're creating chances, Benrahma is getting most of them.
Yeah.
And let's be fair, he's so frustrating because, you know, you see the brilliance that he's capable of. You know, when he comes off the bench, there is a lift around the crowd, isn't there?
Yeah.
But he drives you up the wall. How can he have five shots on target and not convert? And okay, one great save, the tip over the bar was a you know, very fair good, play. Yeah. But I don't think we looked around and said Martinez had a blinder.
No.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like, oh my goodness, if it hadn't been for that keeper, we'd have won 5-1. No one is saying that. And that is what's really frustrating. So however we're playing, Ings got nothing at all. And so you would have thought maybe Scamacca was an option to bring him on.
Yeah, absolutely. The notion that he plays very sort of in a very defensive, very boring, negative manner is very frequently belied by the fact that we get so many corners. You can't get a corner not from a piece of attacking play. It's almost impossible unless one of their players accidentally just boots the ball into the dead ball line. You will be attacking the other team's goal if you get a corner. That's when corners come. But we just never... We had 13 corners in that game. 13. Yeah, I think they had like four or something.
They had two.
Two corners, and we had 13 corners, and we did nothing with them. So we are attacking them, but we just lack quality with either a final ball, a cross, or a finish. Such was the sort of our kind of, you know, not dominance, but the fact that we were well in the game and probably on top when we went in. It felt like maybe, you know, he doesn't very often make changes at halftime, especially if things are not going badly, if they're going either well or, you know, somewhere in the middle. But this felt like you really wanted to fly out the blocks in the second half because we went in on top. And it felt like, you know, you're allowed to make more substitutions now. So it felt like just something to give the other team something to think about straight out of the gate. A player they haven't seen in the first half, just something new would have been really good because you can make more substitutions later in the game. It really did feel, and I don't want to bash this sort of bandwagon because, you know, It's very easy to sort of go, well, if Moyes had done this, this would have happened.
Yeah.
We don't know that. We never know that. And unfortunately, that is kind of, you know, what slightly, you know, dumb football fans constantly do is as if they're playing a computer game where you go, if you bring on a striker, you will get a goal. But it's just not as easy as that. But in this game, it did feel that you could bring someone else on without disrupting the shape of the team. We have multiple players in certain positions that bringing someone else on isn't going to change the shape and might just bring something else.
Well, I mean, absolutely, I agree, really. But you both said, I mean, at the general point about substitutions, I think is part of the general sort of lack of confidence that comes when you're under pressure and you need results. I think there's a tendency to be reactive rather than proactive. I haven't done any statistical analysis of it, but it feels like this season Moyes tends to make the second substitution, you know, tends not to make the first substitution in games. I might be wrong about that, but that's the impression I've got. And that feels like, you know, you were always reacting to things, a bit like going the one goal down, you know, starting to play when you're already chasing the game. And the specific point about Ings, you know, it was obvious he needed to come after an hour, really. Just wasn't in the game, was he? I mean, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes.
Yeah, that's right.
He hardly had a kick, did he? You know, and so the idea that Scamacca, you know, doesn't, I mean, his point is bringing him on in the end, really. I mean, he needs to have a chance, didn't he? And you can't expect him to come on in 2 minutes and, you know,
Scamacca has only got one goal from coming off the bench all season, and that was against Endo.
Right.
But one thing, I absolutely agree with Phil, your thing about it's not a computer game. You can't just say that if you press button Y, then this will change.
Mm.
But one stat that is often quoted is the fact that our expected goals compared with our actual goals is the worst in the Premier League. We should have scored, apparently, our expected goals is 35. We've only scored 24.
Yeah.
And if you add that to the points, the same stats will say that we should have about 35 points now, in which case we'd be looking at safety rather than where we are. So what is clear is that whatever is happening, we're not scoring enough goals, or we are creating chances. As you say, the corner count was high.
Yeah.
So it seems to be early on, it was Antonio comes off and then Scamacca comes on. We finished the Villa game with no strikers. There was no attempt to say, okay, yeah, right, Ings wasn't working. You're right, Jim. It was clear he wasn't working. So is there something around the combination of strikers? I know he doesn't want to break the Paqueta, Rice, Suchek, therefore doesn't want to play two, but would Ings be better playing alongside Scamacca, for example? You know, it seems to be something that, you know, I appreciate there isn't a magic answer to it.
No,
but
no.
At the moment, what we're currently doing is not scoring enough goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
And we've got three, and if you include Mbeumo, who no doubt we'll talk about, we've got four strikers, probably.
Yeah,
you know, so there could be a way of playing around with that a little bit. And as you both said as well, that surprise element at the beginning of the second half. What if Scamacca had come on and Ings had stayed on?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I mean, I know there were what ifs, but you just think somewhere should be play around with that a little bit. I don't think we've hardly ever played with the two, have we?
No, and I do think it feels like he should give some more, you know, thought and attention to the fact that we're not scoring enough goals, rather than, you know, sort of hoping that we'll turn a corner in that respect. You know, one thing, you know, I sort of noticed is when we play sort of three at the back with wing backs like Soufal and Emerson or something, Bowen and Benrahma are still playing wide. You know, they're still playing out wide. Well, why don't you make your wingbacks work like wingbacks and have them, you know, it more centrally, you know, rather than having to sort of, you know, provide crosses. They might be putting them in the net, you know. Also, that kind of wingbacks idea, you know, one of our sort of great periods of football was Harry's three at the back with, you know, Sinclair and, I don't know, Skippy on the wings as wing backs, a playmaker, and then two up front, Hartson and Kitson, or, you know, whoever.
I think we often just don't get bodies in the box.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes turn the ball over, there's a break, and it's two or three. You know, a team that's playing with confidence gets five, six players in the box, you know, gets... You know, if you think back to those that scintillating start we made to the season under Bilic, or when we in the lockdown season when we were scoring three and four, you know, for fun. Time and again, you see a frozen still of us attacking, and there's five, six players in the box.
Yeah, yeah.
And even that game we won at Anfield 3-0 under Bilic, you know, we were getting five and six players in the box, and you have to work hard. You've got to track back. You can't be outnumbered always in the box and expect the ball is just going to break nicely to you. It doesn't work. You've got to create, you know, overlaps and get people into spaces.
I think sort of glacially slowly over the course of the season, we've managed to get players generally further up the pitch, and that might have something to do with, though it's a kind of chicken and egg situation, might have something to do with the sort of rejuvenated Thomas Souček now, who is sort of getting forward a bit more and looks a bit more like the player we first signed. You know, he's quite often in the penalty area now. But there was a couple of games ago where Soufal put a ball across the 6-yard box, absolutely to be attacked. Both Bowen and Benrahma arrived a millisecond too late.
Paqueta did one in against Villa.
Yeah.
Beautiful ball across the box. There should be, you know, Benrahma was on his heels. He should be, that should have been a tap in at the far post.
Yeah.
Where does that come from then, if you see what I mean? Is that a confidence issue?
I think it partly is. I think it's a taking response. It's easy. It could be glib talking about lack of confidence. I think it's often a question of, I'm not the one, I don't want to take responsibility. I can remember. Oh, going back years, you know, that quite good team that went down in 89 with Ince and, you know, and Ward and people like that. I can remember us quite often dominating possession in games and recycling the ball across the face of the opposition penalty area time and time and time again. And it was like nobody would take the risk of the shot or the defence splitting pass because they didn't want the collective groan. Didn't want to be the one that, and I think we're a little bit in that state of mind, isn't it? It's about, you know, who's going to take the responsibility. And to be fair to him, sort of Ben Rama does take a degree of responsibility, but he just quite often simply makes the wrong choice. I mean, that's with him. It's not a confidence. Even the way he took his penalty. I mean, he's not short of confidence, Ben Rama.
No,
he is a little bit short of football brain, I think.
Yes, I think he is. I think he is. I mean, he doesn't naturally play as a winger. He quite often will beat a couple of players, and then the third player, he just decides not to, you know, he does that little dance in front of them, sort of feinting from left to right, hoping that they'll sort of evaporate or something, that and that it'll go past them. You kind of go, what are you going to do? This guy is standing in front of you. You're doing 20 step-overs in front of you. If you just kept going, you've stopped and are now playing a weird game of chicken with a right back. What's the exit strategy from this game of, you know, it's just dancing around in front of him when you were like, you were running, mate, you were running to keep going, you know, get to the dead ball line and cross it or something, or cut inside and have a shot. But it is, you know, sometimes his choice of whether to go past someone or just stop and stand in front of them, hoping that there'll be some movement.
I've spent a lot of games this season where I've really wanted to see the back of Ben Rama, you know, to it's time to get him off and all that kind of thing. And and on occasions I've been, you know, unusually, I know this will surprise you both, I've been proved completely wrong. And, you know, like even the Forest game, you know, when he was brilliant in that, when we suddenly scored the goals, he was involved, assists, he was involved in, you know, and clearly the decision to keep, and I'd have got rid of him at half time.
Yeah. So,
and there's something there, isn't there, that either doesn't quite click. And, you know, and I know there are some fans, you talked about Ben Rama, and he's, you know, they adore him. I mean, he's definitely a hero there, isn't he? I think there's no question. The naysayers are in the minority, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they are. I mean, it is funny how, you know, his highlights reel paints a completely different picture of what he's like. I mean, I think there are a lot of people that, you know, don't necessarily go to the game, sort of see, you know, also the camera is following the ball around like children playing football. And he just comes across better in, it's like those people that are good stage actors and people that are better on film. He's actually better on film than he is in real life, you know. Because you don't see all the kind of other stuff that goes on. But, you know, it does feel, and, you know, this is something I'm just going to come on and talk about when we talk about the Larnaca game, was that because we haven't got any sort of absolute sort of superstars in the team in those attacking positions, we do have players that you can freshen up the team with because they're sort of, they work in a similar area. We, you know, constantly bemoan how little game time Fornals now gets after the great reset of 2022. You know, really, he's the fall guy for that. Lanzini arguably as well. But those are players that could get half an hour of every single game, or a half, 45 minutes of every single game, because they're not, you know, they're not dissimilar to what's already out there. You know, I think Ben Rama and Bowen do have a little bit of pace about them, probably a little bit quicker than Fornals. Though Fornals is quick with the ball at his feet, probably a bit quicker than Manny. But that's sort of what wingbacks are for as well. You know, you rely a little more heavily on speed and to come from Emerson and Soufal.
The things that you're right about, we haven't got superstars in the attacking positions, and no one's really put a run together, have they? I mean, one of the things when we walked away from the Forest game, I thought, great, Ings has got a couple of goals.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll kick on. I mean, then we're going to talk about Larnaca. I was really pleased, you know, Antonio's got a couple of goals, you know, and Bowen had a little bit of a barren run. Then he gets a couple of goals, and you're like, well, okay. And then it just returns again, doesn't it? And maybe that is a sign of a team that's misfiring. But, you know, Smacker, even at the beginning of the season, you know, got those, that's it. And I know he got, there was injuries and various other things that going on there, but it'd be really nice. And we could probably do with it now in these last 10 games. Yeah, someone definitely. Just putting a little run together, definitely. 3 or 4 goals.
Definitely, you know? Definitely. Talking of which, there are 6 goals to talk about in the 2 legs of the Larnaca game. So we'll come on to those after this message.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. Well, you know, it was a point. We really are, if we're going to get to safety, we're clawing our way out of it in the most laborious manner possible. We didn't absolutely balls it up, but 3 points would have been nice. You know, 1 point just keeps us in the chase in what is an incredibly tight clump of football teams from the bottom place to about 12th. You know, separated by like 6 points or something, isn't it?
It's unprecedented, isn't it, as a relegation fight for the bottom eight teams to be? You couldn't really pick any three out of them could go.
The last time that it was like this, sadly, was 2011. That was the last time it was like it. It was also the last season where somebody needed 40 points to stay up. Yeah. There was only something like 4 points separated. Apart from us, we had 33 right at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then the two other sides that went down with us, and I'm sure you can remember who they both were, Birmingham and Blackpool, I think both went down with 39. Yeah. And then Wolves stayed up with 40. There was only about 3 points between them and about 14th, which was Blackburn. Wigan got out of it at the end. That was the last season. So it's not a great omen for us where it was as tight as that.
Yeah. No.
I'm still, I don't know, weirdly confident that we will stay up. It's obviously going to, that's not going to be resolved quickly, is it? I mean, it's going to go a long way.
Yeah.
We've got 5 of the other teams that are down there with us, aren't they? We've got Leicester on the last day. We've got Leeds, yeah. Palace, yeah. Bournemouth. And Southampton obviously is the next one. I mean, it is in our hands, and we play well against Forest and Everton when we really had to.
Win 3 and draw 2 of those games, and that's probably it. I would have thought. We don't need you. It's not a titanic task, but. As you say, we've just got to. I think Cornet coming back is a real bonus.
Me too.
And the gap, in time, with the game off and the international break, allows Soufal to get back. That'll make a big difference. I think he was his injury has come at a very unfortunate time, hasn't it?
There was talk of him playing for the Czech Republic this week.
That's really encouraging. That's really
the fact that he's even being talked about as possibly playing. Yeah. You'd like to think that's a strong.
That's great. That's really good news. And Cornet, I know he's caught offside a couple of times, but he's got that pace, hasn't he? And he does know where the goal is. He's got a kind of He's got a bit about him, Cornet.
He's direct, isn't he? He's very direct. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, the times we've seen him, obviously Chelsea away, where he had the disallowed goal and hit the post in his very sort of short cameo. Coming off the bench, especially, felt that he was, you know, let off the leash. He felt like he really was someone who came onto the pitch and thought, "I want to make a difference now. I'm not just going to keep my head down and do what the fella I'm replacing did." You know, he absolutely wanted to sort of make a difference. Yeah, so I think that's right. I think he is a good, he's going to be a good addition for the run-in. You know, one team that clearly was heavily struck by their precarious situation is Crystal Palace, who sacked their manager.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty extraordinary, I have to say. I wonder if there's just sort of some, you know, maybe they just don't like each other, the chairman and Vieira or something, or, you know, something was going on.
There was all this talk about it being a, you know, kind of long-term project. And, of course, they've also sacked him, and now there's this talk of Hodgson, isn't there?
Well, he's in. Hodgson's been confirmed for the rest of the season, yeah.
I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. He's formally retired, hasn't he?
Particularly as Palace had, you know, their remaining games were against, an awful lot of them were against the teams that were below them. It was in their hands. They had a very difficult run.
Yeah, they had a tough run.
And last season they probably outperformed. This might be ringing a bell, but you know, their expectations may have been higher because of the way that they played last season. Only two teams down there haven't pulled the trigger. We're one, and Leicester's the other.
Yeah,
everyone else down there has made that move, and in some cases made that move twice. It's impossible now to imagine that Moyes is either going to go when we're already mathematically down, or at the end of the season, isn't it? I mean, there's no danger that they're going to pull the trigger between now and then.
I don't think so.
And Europe clouds the issue, doesn't it?
Because it does.
If Europe wasn't there, really, then we'd be having a totally different conversation.
I think so. It really does. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, speaking of which, we played those two games. We scored six goals in them. Mark, you and I went to the second one. Jim, you watched the first one on TV. I only saw very brief highlights. Antonio's excellent goals, though in both cases he's completely unmarked. He's in, like, you know, if they had a sort of camera close-up of him, it's quite possible there wouldn't actually be a Larnaca player in the same shot.
Bad goals, I suppose, defensively from their point of view. I thought we were pretty poor in that first
Larnaca.
I thought we played badly. I think there was quite a lot of knock-on from the Brighton. You know, there were misplaced passes. I mean, you know, Paqueta was poor. There was a sort of kind of lack of intensity, which was understandable. I mean, we knocked the ball around, all right. You know, but they actually came into the game quite effectively. They had some serious chances. They had 14 corners to nil in that game. It was comfortable. We got the two goals in the first half. We were never gonna lose the game, but it wasn't a convincing performance. I didn't think. I don't know what you think.
I mean, if you talk about a highlights reel, you know, hitting the post, Paqueta, you know, threw on his own, you know, and Antonio should have had that, you know, the perfect hat trick. If you just pull those together, you go, well, it was completely one-sided. Let's ignore the 14-0 corner count.
Yeah.
And it did look as if we... And then if you then added that on Moyes' post-match interview where he just went, that was basically a terrible performance. I'm thrilled with the result, but the performance was awful. You'd be going, what game were you watching? But you're right. A team even just, you know, half a league higher than that would have caused us problems. And that's the sad thing. If we'd been chasing that game after 10, 15 minutes, in a way, they were probably the ideal opposition for us.
Yeah. The second leg was, we were very good, I thought. Obviously, again, it's always weaker opposition. One thing that really struck me in that game is that it's you know, sometimes part of what's very hard about playing against sort of lower league opposition is that they play at a slightly slower pace. And if you're used to playing with a certain intensity and pace, it's like if you play tennis and you play against someone that just dabs it over the net. If you're quite good at tennis and better than the person you're playing, it's really hard to play against that because there's no speed on the ball to return, you know, with the racket. Obviously, really good players would just demolish that because they can play against every type of player. But it was really noticeable to me that Larnaca's players were probably a bit less fit than our players, a bit less athletic than our players, and we had more room. But it was hard to get up a head of steam against a team that themselves are not playing with great intensity or pace. That said, I thought we were very good. I thought Lanzini and Fornals were really good, which will bring me to my sort of conclusions from that game in regard to our Premier League standing at the moment.
So was Bowen, I thought, again.
Bowen was very good. Bowen's second goal, the header, was fantastic.
Well, it was Trevor Brooking to Pop Robson, wasn't it? It was just beautiful.
I mean, it's one of those things that, like, it wasn't like Arthur Masuaku's goal against Chelsea, a fluke. It was speculative. He just instinctively went, oh, I wonder if this will work, and then headed it backwards in a large looping thing. But I think what happened was exactly what he was trying to do. I'm sure he didn't have much, you know, wasn't under the illusion that it was definitely going to come off, but he was going, I'm going to try this. And it worked absolutely perfectly.
It was a fantastic goal. Yeah.
It's very rare to see headed goals in sort of goal of the month or match of the day and stuff, but that really was an incredibly good goal and a very sort of classy finish. I was very pleased for him. You know, both his goals were, you know, snaffling up that rebound for the first one.
It was tight, that angle, you know, and that was a good finish. Really good side foot finish on his wrong foot. It was good.
Yeah, very pleased for him. Obviously, the penalty really changed. The sending off really changed the game. I really dislike penalties and red cards because they very often spoil games, and I think too many are given. I thought it wasn't. I mean, I only saw one angle of it when I saw it on a replay later. I mean, part of what happened when, you know, we were surprised when it was reviewed by VAR. We were surprised when that happened. I thought, obviously, our sudden acceleration made it look quite dramatic. He was sort of going at quite a lick when his, leg was sort of stopped by an immovable object. So he kind of flew through the air. So it looked quite dramatic, but because the guy was quite close to him, it didn't sort of seem like, you know, he'd run half the pitch and lunged at him with both feet off the ground or anything. It was, though, he was fairly close to him when the challenge happened. So it didn't look, you know, it definitely looked like a free kick, but and possibly a yellow card. But it didn't look
at
like
full speed, even on the telly, at full speed, I agree with that it looked not innocuous exactly, but just like a, you know, kind of a late coming together. But actually, it was a very nasty challenge and a potential leg breaker and cynical because Fornals had done him. He was frustrated, and he just went for him, and he could easily have ruptured his Achilles, broken his leg. You know, you think of that one that friendly in Germany where Cresswell was done. You think of the one. Yeah. Bristol Rovers against the one
Kieran Dyer.
Kieran Dyer's career. He didn't sort of fly in kung fu style, but it was a cynical, nasty red card offence. It was absolutely right for it to be reviewed.
Because Fornals was protesting, you know, in favour of their player.
He'd felt it, but not seen it.
Right, yeah.
You know, he was past the guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was on his bike. I mean,
there was no attempt to play the ball. It was just, I'm gonna stamp on your heel, I'm not gonna break your leg. I mean, it was horrible.
Right,
it was a nasty challenge.
Yeah, but then, you know, we were pretty comfortable after that. After
and
that
apparently happened. The same player had done the thing about 10 minutes into their league game the Monday or the Sunday before.
Oh, really? Right, right.
It was his second red card in a week.
Yeah, comfortable for us, obviously, because they were 10 men for quite a big portion of the match. But I thought we played well. I thought, but I did think, Lanzini was, you know, the best player on the pitch by miles and was very good, I thought. Again, he's just not, he's under a kind of fraction of the pressure he would be under in the Premier League. But nevertheless, he was just the best passer of the ball on the pitch, you know, and quite often there have been games with Lanzini in where I've thought exactly the same thing. And it, both his performance and Fornals' performance, you know, made me think, why aren't these guys getting like, you know, half an hour every game we play, at least half an hour, half a game, you know, at least one of them, if not both, actually.
It was a mature performance from both of them as well. What I liked about it was they both got tucked in and they treated it like it was a Premier League game, albeit, you know, and I really like that. When you compare that with Scamacca coming on in the first leg and had a face like a slapped arse, didn't he? He just looked like he really would rather be anywhere than on that pitch and wearing a claret and blue shirt. And now, I like the fact that both Fornals and Lanzini turned it on. And, you know, as if to go, right, okay, you're wrong to stick me on the bench, which is kind of what you want to see, isn't it? Taking those opportunities.
Absolutely. And the formation was interesting as well. There was a fluidity about the front. Like, Fornals was quite central a lot of the time, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
And was really effective there. I've often thought, oh, he might be the one to play behind a striker. It's the opposite of Benrahma, isn't it? He has a lightning football brain, Fornals. The number of really telling first time passes he makes, and he's always looking to be progressive and creative in what he does. I still think he's a bit undervalued by a lot of West Ham fans, and I'm with you. I think it's baffling he hasn't had more time in a struggling side, you know, he has been a key part of a successful side for two seasons. There might be something that those things might correlate, you know, that might be causation and correlation, you know. And I agree about Lanzini. It's just a shame that Lanzini, after his ACL injury, never had that just snap of pace over 5-10 yards that he had when he was when he first came to us. But he is still, I agree, probably the best passer of the football in the club. You know, times when in tight spots towards the ends of games, when, you know, the opposition, everyone's a bit leggy, you know, it's not going to matter quite so much. And he might be the one to unpick, you know. Last season he scored that amazing goal at Crystal Palace. You know, he can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's really weird that we don't.
And, you know, that possibly that killer through ball or just that sort of, you know, what sometimes all of our front players are unable to provide. Yeah. Antonio, Bowen and Benrahma is just that killer slide rule pass. It was interesting. It's interesting. Scamacca against Larnaca. The ball wasn't being played sort of in front of him. There was he pointed where he wanted the ball when Johnson just sort of kicked it straight at him rather than into the space in front of him. You know, I mean, Ben Johnson is a, you know, a relatively young, less experienced footballer, but it was like, you know, Scamacca was pointing, going, if you put it in that area of sky, that is between my forehead and the goal. If you hit it straight at my forehead, well, it's just going to go anywhere. You know, I've got legs and I will run to head it into the net. But if, because I'm 6'4", you think the only way I can get the ball into the net is with my head, at least put it in a place where I can get my head onto it. Because a couple of crosses, there was, you know, one game earlier this season, I can't remember what it was, where the crossing was awful and it was straight towards his head with a forest of, you know, opposition defenders' heads in the way. It was just never going to get there. Wasn't in the right place. Should be, you know, in an area between Scamacca's head and the goal. But, you know, on the deck is probably a bit better with him.
I thought he showed more in that second leg, though, and I was pleased he scored.
Yeah, and
you know, I thought his attitude was an awful lot better. And I don't know whether that's to do with the Moyes' public comments, the fact that he doesn't look like he's going to play for Italy. You know, I don't know whether finally he's realised. I know there's transfer talk about Juventus and on all of that, but you sort of, sooner or later you do have to do something with those opportunities.
Yeah,
and he did. He scored the goal. And what I also liked was when he and Bowen were taken off. And Bowen kind of, you know, they walked off together and they had to go the long way round.
Yeah.
And when they came round to the sort of bottom end where we were, we're in the Billy Bonds.
Yeah.
And as they kind of came round the corner, you know, it was very clear the reaction that they were, you know, Bowen, you would expect to get that reaction, but there was an awful lot of encouragement for Scamacca there.
Yeah. Big round of applause. Yeah.
It was nice very to see.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of goodwill towards him, and I thought you saw glimpses of what he offers as the kind of striker he is, coming deep, balls around the corner, linking play. He's a different kind of striker to any of the others that we've got, isn't he? And it's about adjusting for him and for him, you know, him adjusting a bit as well and learning the physicality of the English game. I'm still a Scamacca optimist. I think we could still
see him
good. I don't see any reason why not, actually.
Well, he's got a good range of passing. He does quite a lot of switching wings, you know, long cross-field balls for someone to run on, and they reach their target. They're, you know, he's not a kind of Italian international for nothing. He's got a good rounded set of skills. You know, I'd like to see him eventually, you know, when we got Arnautovic, he was probably 27 or something, you know, Scamacca is young. He could be another Marco Arnautovic. You know, he's got good physicality. He's big. He's not fast. He really takes a while for him to get any momentum going. But, you know, if he's quick with the ball at his feet, you know, we haven't really seen him attempt to dribble much at all. But, you know, the more you see of him, the more he might do that, you know.
The striker of the night, of course, and the most joyful moment of the night was just one of those lovely moments that occasionally happen. And I mean, not only was it a sort of cheeky finish, and particularly having with that little bit the injustice of the earlier, the was it FCSB or whatever it was when it was, you know, it was counted as an assist, wasn't it? And it wasn't a goal. But the joy with she celebrated that goal, and the evident joy of the rest of the team there.
Yeah,
fantastic.
There's something about him, isn't there? Even that goal, you know, against the Taring team, you know, Suchet getting the sort of ridiculous free header, but just that nous to come off the man to create the little bit of space, allows him to get his foot to the ball first. And just tuck it in. It was a proper little, you know, sniffer goal scorer's goal. But at the same time, also, you know, he's growing. Isn't he? What, 18? You know,
he's 18.
He's quick, and he's going to be a big lad, and he knows where the goal is. He's been his scoring record this season at the level is. I mean, you know, we've said that about players before, you know, who don't come to anything. But there's just there's just a sense that he's got the wherewithal in every respect, both the physical attributes, but also the brain and the courage and the commitment to the work ethic to make it. I really hope it'd be wonderful to produce our own Premier League quality striker.
I agree with you, he's got football brain, but his brain did get a little bit fogged after that, didn't it? Because the evident joy of it when he went herring off to make that tackle that there was
and
ended up with a yellow card. Yeah. I mean, you're 4-0 up, you're playing against 10 men, you've just scored on your home debut, and And yeah. I know afterwards Jarrod Bowen sort of kind of praised him, and we want players who get tapped in and everything. But he just lost the plot a little bit there,
yeah,
didn't he?
Did, yeah.
And entirely understandably.
Yeah,
you want him to be, you know, you want him to be sort of man-managed fairly carefully, don't you? That's sort of the striker that came on in the 120 minutes against Manchester United. That young striker, I've forgotten his name, who came on as a sub and was then substituted himself. He struggled in that game, struggled to get in the game. I mean, he didn't play particularly badly. He just couldn't find a way to get into that game. You know, he wasn't, you know, and that those kind of footballing smarts will come with just time and experience. So, you know, you want, if there can be, you know, if we progress, obviously, in the tournament.
I'd like to see him involved with the first team in these last, you know, we've got a lot of substitutes. At the moment, we haven't got, although we've got three strikers in front of him, I don't think any of them have staked to claim for it to be the number one striker at the moment. So the idea of him on the bench, being involved with the team and all that kind of thing, you know, coming on with 10, 15 to go, something like that, confidence high.
Yeah.
You know, what's he got to lose? No pressure on him. Yeah. You know,
the under-18s are going to wrap up their league this week. In fact, I think as a game tonight, I think if somebody loses tonight, they're champions, I think.
Right.
Is it Fulham or Southampton playing tonight? They've got an FA Youth Cup semi-final coming up against a good Southampton team, but... you know, he could get two lots of silverware this season with Barmer. You never know. I mean, it's very, very encouraging. I've watched a little bit of the just highlights of stuff of the under-18s. They do play a really good brand of football. I like Kevin Keane. He's a West Ham boy, isn't he? And he's really got them purring, I think, you know.
If he's got a bit of pace, you know, I haven't really seen that much in Mbama, but, you know, that could be a very good asset for us because we are a squad that is a little bit lacking in pace.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, Bowen is our paciest sort of threat at the moment, and he's not, you know, exactly known for having sort of kind of blistering, you know, Traore type or Sam Maximum type pace, but he is fairly quick. Cornet, you know, is very quick with the ball at his feet, so he's got a bit of pace. But somebody else on the bench to come on and just scare a few defenders would be great. A great sort of asset for us, especially, you know, if we, as we are already are, kind of chasing points with this part of the season left. So our next home game, who is it? It's
Southampton
on the 2nd of April, isn't it?
Then Newcastle just a few days after that.
Fulham
after that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it two? Is it actually two sets of kind of Saturdays and Wednesdays, isn't it? Because doesn't Liverpool midweek come fairly soon after that?
Oh, April. It's absolutely packed,
Rammed,
isn't it?
Yeah.
We're playing loads of games in April because the European games and... It's two games a week, isn't it? Throughout the whole of the month, I think.
Yeah, we can't afford to have our now quite customary play well in one game and then play badly in the next one.
And it might help, mightn't it?
Yeah, I think it might help.
Might kind of get in, you know, get if we get a positive result against Southampton, play well against Newcastle, even if, you know, I mean, you'd be happy again with the point really there, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
If we can get some performances in, there's a kind of sort of sense in which you could start to pick up confidence and go on a bit of a roll there. That you've got Cornet coming back, Scamacca now, perhaps in and around it. So we've actually got some people who can stick the ball in the net. Maybe, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? We might end up thinking, why were we worried about going down? Come the end of the season, you never know.
Steady on, Jim.
On the other hand, it could be 2011 all over again. Because at this stage, 2011, we thought we were going to...
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we're just beating around about now. Denver Barr was scoring and it all looked fine.
Yeah. No, it's funny, wasn't it? Yeah. So I guess it's predictions for the Southampton game. I mean, they're having the odd really good game, aren't they, now? And
yeah, they're no mugs.
Yeah, they're in a funny place, aren't they? They've been in a bit of a decline under kind of Hasenhüttl, who I thought was actually quite a good manager, and they sort of played quite well and lost with Hasenhüttl quite a lot as well. But you know, I'd like to think that we can win that.
Their third manager of the season has had a bit of a bounce, hasn't he? I mean, they've got 7 points in his first four games there. Yeah. We would certainly take 7 points over our next four games. And you know, it's going to be a lot will depend on the mood and how we start. Forest, we started off really, really brightly. Fans were behind. We were away. Villa just felt. I mean, when you look back at the highlights, when you look at the build-up to Villa's goal, you can kind of almost hear the players talking to each other. I mean, it's sort of, it was, and I think so. A lot will depend on us and getting behind them, and I'm hoping that the knock-on effect of Europe, the slight with a small F feel-good factor,
yeah,
you know, of the fact that we are still involved in something here, and we've actually got. And it's not unreasonable to think we've got a chance of winning it.
No, we're favourites now, aren't we? I mean, you know.
Although, if you look at the last eight teams, we have comfortably the lowest league position of any of the eight teams that are in
there. Absolutely.
But you know, maybe that will play a little bit of a part in it as well. You know, and I think it has. It was a nice little antidote to the, you know, say after Brighton. You know, there was a nice little thing. Yeah, okay, we've got the European game. This feels like a bit of a bonus. And I'm hoping that congested April with the slight sort of little bit of, you know, stardust about Europe may well help us. But I think the mood at Southampton will be really important because they will clearly be fancying this in the way that we should be fancying it.
Definitely. I mean, you know, one big problem is I don't think there's ever been a season where I've been... You know, I think I said this on last week's podcast or our last podcast that I don't think I've ever had the sensation of the fact that we were sort of playing well, making me rather worried and depressed because we're not going to put the ball in the net in a period where we're playing extremely well. You know, it felt a little bit like that against Forest in the sort of first portion of the game, going, we're doing everything except sticking the ball in the net. If they stick the ball in the net, we'll lose this game. And we've been playing really well. We don't deserve to lose it. But if you don't put the ball in there, you do deserve to lose that game because that's the rules. You have to put the ball in there. And similarly, you know, Southampton, you know, as you said, Jim, there was a kind of interesting, so there was a good fluidity about that sort of performance against Larnaca. And obviously they are lower league opposition, but we seem to... There was actually a kind of much more of a kind of an attacking modus operandi, you know, for now centrally, Lanzini pulling the strings, you know, free roll for Suchek. You know, it felt like we really knew what we were doing, that particular.
Yeah.
And a lot of those European performances have been like that. The ones last year where we were routinely beating teams by three goals, or each time felt like it was a team that sort of knew what it was doing a little better than sometimes the first team,
yeah,
you know, or the Premier League outfit. Right. So it'd be good if some of that can move over. Anyway, predictions.
For Southampton, I'm afraid I'm going to go 1-1.
Right. Jim?
2-0.
2-0. 2-1. I'll take 2-1. Excellent. Well, I could see us doing it one point at a time as well for the rest of this season. But going to be optimistic and go for the win. Well, that's been it for this week's Stop Hammer Time. My name is Phil Whelans. With me have been Jim Grant.
Here we go.
And Mark Sandell.
Good evening.
Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.